enjoyed our first or two-thirds of our presentation on Sunday night. I've been looking forward to the remainder of it tonight, so I hope that you guys have as well, and we'll let our brother Elder Tommy Gill finish his presentation here. Well, good evening. So, for starters, I want everybody to understand that this presentation is not finished. I have been working on it for months now, adding to it. Every time I think I've finished it, I find something new and I add to it. Originally, when I had this idea, I didn't know how far I was going to get on this. I went through the Book of Mormon several times. I cluttered up my wife's wall in my house with pictures and maps and my ideas. And, well, through a lot of effort and work, this is what I've come to. Now, there is one presumption that I make, and you have to bear with that for a moment. It's not based on my ideas. It is actually based on evidence. I'm not going to say that the presumption is completely correct. I'm not going to say that there isn't possible variance in it. But you have to bear with the presumption for a little bit until I get into it. So, we start out the promised land, or the land of Nephi. Looks so nice, doesn't it? In 1 Nephi 5, 2:11 through 2:17, "And it came to pass that I, Nephi, did guide the ship, that we sailed again toward the promised land. And we went forth upon the land and did pitch our tents, and we did call it the promised land. And it came to pass that we did begin to till the ground, and we began to plant seeds. Yea, we did put all our seeds into the earth, which we had brought forth from the land of Jerusalem. And it came to pass that they did grow exceedingly, wherefore we were blessed in abundance. And it came to pass that we did find upon the land of promise, as we journeyed in the wilderness, that there were beasts in the forests of every kind, both the cow and the ox, and the ass and the horse and the goat and the wild goat, and all manner of wild animals which were for the use of men. And we did find all manner of ore, both of gold and of silver and of copper." In my own thought process as a human, and I've oftentimes wondered what it would be like being those pioneers, and what would be the steps to build a civilization, the beginning steps. I mean, right at the beginning, what would you have to do? And I think there are clues here in exactly what they did. And so what do we have? We have, number one, they pitched their tents. They began their homes. Probably used the same tents they brought over from Jerusalem, all the way from Jerusalem. Of course, after 8 years in the desert, they were probably patched up and time again. They began to till the ground, planting crops. What more important thing is there, starting a colony? Then it says they grew exceedingly. I take that to be as they began harvesting. Some things, you know, radishes, 21 days, pretty fast. Other things, similar. So they would have began harvesting. Once they knew that the harvest was in good swing, they began journeying. They began exploring the surroundings. What's available to us that we can expand and grow and put in deep roots here in this new land? So, what did they find in their travels? Animals, cow and ox, ass and horse, goat and wild goat, all kinds of wild animals. Metals, they found gold, silver, copper. I think all of these are clues I have not investigated all of them, and that's why I say this is not done. I've investigated some of them, and that's what I'm going to present tonight. So here we have, and here you see my presumption. Gold deposits in Central America. And all those red dots are major gold mines in Central America. Interestingly, the number one is the only gold mine in the Mayan territory, which is in western Guatemala. Most Mayan gold predominantly came from Honduras and Nicaragua. If you notice 11 and 12 in Nicaragua, that is called the Bonanza gold mine. It is the largest deposit of gold in all of Central America. Let's look at another map or a close-up of one area from the previous map. Welcome to Panama. Bienvenido a Panama. Is that flickering? So, can some intelligent student tell me what these letters stand for, AU and CU? AU is gold, very good. Anybody got a guess for the CU? CU is copper. These are from the periodic table, the abbreviations of gold and copper. This area in Panama, the pink area there, has an actual very high percentage of copper. Here we have another map of Central America. The first mining map that I showed you in Panama is located right there in the circle. There is a second location of copper here in Guatemala, which, because of this copper source, this is where the LDS puts the landing of Nephi in them, right around that area, because copper is one of the key clues that Nephi left us. Here in Honduras, we have a third location of copper. It's not nearly as big as those other two, but there is one there. And then we have a fourth location, right here. In Nicaragua. So, keep those in your mind. I'm going to go to 2 Nephi 4, and the passage is 7 through 26, but I'm only going to read a couple verses in it. And it came to pass that the Lord did warn me that I, Nephi, should depart from them and flee into the wilderness, and all they which would go with me. So right here we have the period of time when Lehi died, passed away, and God comes and warns Nephi to leave his brothers, Laman and Lemuel. And after that we had journeyed for the space of many days, we did pitch our tents, and my people would that we should call the name of the place Nephi. And I did teach my people that they should build buildings and that they should work in all manner of wood and of iron and of copper and of brass. So, the original landing site had copper close by, and the new location, after traveling a good distance of many days, has copper. The black circle is approximately 300 miles from the red circle. Possible many days travel. Walking this would amount to 30 days, give or take, depending on terrain. But we have a new clue in this passage. Iron. The other location didn't mention iron. This one does. From the Geological Survey Bulletin 1034 by the U.S. Department of State, in the vicinity of the Rosita copper mine, iron deposits of commercial size, low in phosphorus and sulfur, and with an iron content of as much as 65%. We also have another clue here, brass. Located approximately 50 miles north by northwest from the Rosita copper mines is the Coco mine, which is a zinc mine. Brass is an alloy of copper and zinc. The new location had to contain iron and zinc, along with gold and silver and copper. The time spent in the new location. In Jacob 5:45, Jerem 1:1, Omni 1, verses 1, 6, 10, 13, 18, gives a time frame of when they were in this new location. How many generations did they live here? Anybody know? Kind of shocked me, actually. You know, I thought, you know, they left and soon after Laman and Lemuel followed after him. Nope. Jacob, Enos, Jerem, Omni, Amram, Chemish, Abnadon, Amalekai, and Amalekai gave the plates to Mosiah, the father of Benjamin, King Benjamin. Seven generations they lived in this new location. Just think about that for a moment. How many generations have we been living here in the U.S.? How easy would it be for U.S. citizens to just walk away? How easy would it be for you to leave where your ancestors lived for so many generations? And that kind of sets a stage for a future thing we're going to read. At this point, I will add in a short history lesson. When Columbus came upon Costa Rica for the first time, one of the men on his ship said Costa de Riquezas, or Coast of Riches, which later became Costa Rica. Columbus's men marveled at what they considered unimaginable wealth. Even the children walked around with jewelry of gold. And this is why. This is a map of existing mines in Costa Rica. Up in the northwest corner, where it looks like a black smudge, those are mines, one on top of another. A lot of these are family-owned still. Each X is the location of a mine in use today, many of which are from ancient times. These are all gold and silver mines. As you may or may not be able to see, the copper in Panama and Nicaragua are not very far, but we'll get back to that later. And as you see, if you look down following the east coast, you can see that bay there down there in Panama, and that's where that copper is in Panama. In the other map. I think it is important to take the following scripture into consideration during this study. 1 Nephi 3:102-109. And it came to pass that I saw a mist of darkness on the face of the land of promise, and I saw lightnings, and I heard thunderings and earthquakes and all manner of tumultuous noises. And I saw the earth and the rocks that they were rent, and I saw mountains tumbling into pieces. And I saw the plains of the earth that they were broken up, and I saw many cities that they were sunk. And I saw many that they were burned with fire, and I saw many that they did tumble to the earth because of the quaking thereof. This is the vision which Nephi saw of the death of Christ, what would take place here on the Americas. And I think this is important to take into consideration. Anybody ever seen one of these happening? My brother and I and my oldest son got to see one coming back from Yucatan the first time I took him to the youth camp there in Yucatan. We were coming across Guatemala, leaving a valley, going up the mountain. on one side of the valley. On the other side of the valley was a volcano erupting, putting off this huge cloud of smoke and ash. And as it grew, it was spreading across the valley going eastward, and it just got darker and darker and darker and darker under there, not allowing any sunlight through. It's quite an amazing sight, actually. Good thing we were past it already. So here we have the Central American volcanic arc. Imagine the power and destruction with all of these volcanoes appearing in the span of 3 hours. There are 100 of them. Each one spreading out that ash cloud, it would have made the whole face of the land dark. Going back to our passage in 1 Nephi 3, there's a piece here that I just want to throw in because I've heard it said that you know there's no way that you can know that all the volcanoes came up at once. And well, that's partially true. We've seen volcanoes come up since then. But that's why I underlined this spot. I saw many cities that they were sunk. So, welcome to Guatemala. Lake Atitlan. It's in western Guatemala. You see those three volcanoes there? This lake has something that is actually rare in the world. The lake has no exit to the ocean. This lake also contains a hidden secret, only recently discovered as recent as 2003. It's called the Samambaj Ruins. This Mayan city is almost 200 feet below water in this lake, which was created by three volcanoes which had to rise up simultaneously. Interestingly, the archaeologists say this city was sunk almost 2,000 years ago. Sound familiar to you? Does to me. And we go to Helaman, the prophecy of Samuel the Lamanite, adds to what Nephi saw. But behold, as I said unto you concerning another sign, a sign of his death, behold, in that day that he shall suffer death, the sun shall be darkened and refuse to give his light unto you, and also the moon and the stars, and there shall be no light upon the face of this land, even from the time that he shall suffer death for the space of 3 days, to the time that he shall rise again from the dead. Yea, at the time that he shall yield up the ghost, there shall be thunderings for the space of many hours, and the earth shall shake and tremble, and the rocks which are upon the face of the earth, which are both above the earth and beneath, which ye know at this time is solid, or the more part of it is one solid mass, shall be broken up. Yea, they shall be rent in twain, and shall ever after be found in seams, and in cracks, and in broken fragments upon the face of the whole earth, yea, both above the earth and beneath. And behold, there shall be great tempests, and there shall be many mountains laid low like unto a valley. And there shall be many places which are now called valleys, which shall become mountains, whose height thereof is great. And many highways shall be broken up, and many cities shall become desolate, and many graves shall be opened, and shall yield up many of their dead. And many saints shall appear unto many. And behold, thus hath the angel spoken unto me, for he hath said unto me that there should be thunderings and lightnings for the space of many hours. And he said unto me that while the thunder and the lightning lasted, and the tempest, that these things should be, and that darkness should cover the face of the whole earth for the space of 3 days. So he actually adds in quite a few descriptions here, but there's one description that I'm going to key off on. And the earth shall shake and tremble, and the rocks which are upon the face of the earth, which are both above the earth and beneath, which ye know at this time is solid, or the more part of it is one solid mass, shall be broken up. Yea, They shall be rent in twain, and shall ever after be found in seams and in cracks and in broken fragments upon the face of the whole earth, yea, both above the earth and beneath. Here we have a picture of Central America and the tectonic plates. The seams shall ever after be found in seams and cracks upon the face of the whole earth. Can you even imagine all of these cracks appearing during the death of our Creator? And then we have that passage in 3 Nephi 4, and it came 61 to 63. And it came to pass that thus did the 3 days pass away. And it was in the morning, and the darkness dispersed from off the face of the land, and the earth did cease to tremble, and the rocks did cease to rend, and the dreadful groanings did cease, and all the tumultuous noises did pass away, and the earth did cleave together again that it stood. In my own way of looking at things, I see this as, you know, the Creator was killed, and the earth just about fell apart to pieces. Yet, He had mercy, He was risen again, and He held it still. Just my way of looking at it. If you notice, the Cocos Plate on the Pacific side of Central America, see how the shape of the white line is? That follows almost perfectly the shape of the volcanic arc belt inland on the west coast of Central America. They know now, after great study, that when that plate cracked and broke, all that magma and lava pushed up those mountains and volcanoes along that entire west coast. Those 100 volcanoes, give or take. We know there's a couple, there's one in Mexico that came up in my dad's lifetime. But they all came up. So here we have in 3 Nephi 4, 6 through 14. Again, it adds something to the what's happening. This is actually when it happened. And it came to pass in the 30 and fourth year, in the first month, in the fourth day of the month, that there arose a great storm, such an one has never been known in all the land. And there was also a great and terrible tempest, and there was terrible thunder, insomuch that it did shake the whole earth, as if it was about to divide asunder. And there were exceeding sharp lightnings, such as never had been known in all the land. And the city of Zarahemla did take fire, and the city of Moroni did sink into the depths of the sea, and the inhabitants thereof were drowned. And the earth was carried up upon the city of Moroniha, and in the place of the city thereof there became a great mountain. And there was a great and terrible destruction in the land southward. But behold, there was a more great and terrible destruction in the land northward. For behold, the whole face of the land was changed because of the tempests and the whirlwinds and the thunderings and the lightnings and the exceeding great quaking of the whole earth. And the highways were broken up and the level roads were spoiled and many smooth places became rough. And many great and notable cities were sunk and many were burned and many were shook till the buildings thereof had fallen to the earth and the inhabitants thereof were slain. And the places were left desolate. And there were some cities which remained, but the damage thereof was exceeding great. And there were many in them who were slain. And there were some which were carried away in the whirlwind. And whither they went, no man knoweth, save they know that they were carried away. And thus the face of the whole earth became deformed because of the tempests and the thunderings and the lightnings and the quakings of the earth. Just yesterday, changing a couple things that I added in, I noticed that this passage appears to me to be a chiasm. And if you look at it says, what's one, two, the end of the third paragraph, destruction in the land southward, that's the end of the first half of the chiasm. But behold, there was a more great and terrible destruction in the land northward, the beginning of the other side of the chiasm. And I believe that the previous paragraph is speaking of the land southward. And if you go into the Book of Mormon, those three cities it mentions are in the land southward. And the paragraph following the greater destruction in the land northward, I believe is speaking of the land northward. And so there's a distinction here between the land southward and the land northward. The destruction was great in the land southward, but it was much worse in the land northward. Here I have a couple maps of the volcanoes in Central America and Mexico. If you look at the one in the top right corner, that's Nicaragua. That's Lake Managua and Lake Nicaragua. If you look at those mountain peaks between the mountains and on each, between the lakes and on each side, each one of those is a volcano. Boom, 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 one all right beside each other. And of course, the one right in between the two lakes, it's very hard to even see the... I'm moving, I know. Right here. That is a huge crater. It's one of the greatest volcanoes recorded when it erupted. Would have devastated tremendously. And supposedly, it erupted almost 2,000 years ago. As you see, the map on the left top side, there are quite a few there in Guatemala. You can't see them all. Those are just the active ones. There are actually 37 volcanoes in Guatemala. There are, I believe, 54 in Mexico. There are 18 in Nicaragua. 13 or 16, I don't remember for sure, in El Salvador. I did make a list and I forgot to add it in. So, continue on. So I think it's now important in our study to distinguish the division of the land northward and the land southward. The land southward had great destruction. The land northward had much worse destruction. There is a distinction there. So, here I'm going to reveal my assumption. Omni 1, 37, 39. And Coriantumr was discovered by the people of Zarahemla, and he dwelt with them for the space of 9 moons. And it talks about the tablet they found with him, and the tablet had writings on it, and it says here at the end of this passage, and their bones lay scattered in the land northward. The purpose of this passage is to show that the land northward is the land where the Jaredites had inhabited and finally destroyed themselves. Alma 13:77, and thus the land of Nephi and the land of Zarahemla were nearly surrounded by water, there being a small neck of land between the land northward and the land southward. So, through my studying of the different lands and everything, I know that Zarahemla, Nephi, and there's a lot of smaller ones around Zarahemla, they were all in the land southward. The land desolation, which was the Jaredites, was in the land northward. And then there was also what they called the land northward beside the land of desolation. So, continue. The following is a quote from a book called The Mysterious Mayan. The Olmecs were responsible for the destruction of their own cities. Strangely, anthropologists and archaeologists cannot explain why the Olmecs, at the height of their society, suddenly vanished. But we can. Ether 6, 21 through 23. And in the second year, the word of the Lord came to Ether, that he should go and prophesy unto Coriantumr, that if he would repent and all his household, the Lord would give unto him his kingdom and spare the people. Otherwise, they should be destroyed, and all his household, save it were himself. And he should only live to see the fulfilling of the prophecies which had been spoken concerning another people receiving the land for their inheritance. And Coriantumr should receive a burial by them, and every soul should be destroyed, save it were Coriantumr. So here I have a map of the territory of the Olmec, a general map at the height of their civilization. The red lines there going across northern Mexico, and the one on the south, which is actually very close to where the border of Honduras and Guatemala is, and it cuts through El Salvador. That is their territory, according to scientists today. There are purple dot squares on there. They're hard to see. On the southern border, right on the border, there are two of them. The one on the top is the ruins of Copan in Honduras. And up until just a decade or so ago, the ruins in Honduras were always thought to be purely Mayan, until they did some excavating into one of them and found out that the ruins you see are actually built on top of older ruins. And the ones underneath are Olmec. In Ether 6, verses 53, 57 to 58, pretty much this whole chapter, the end of the chapter. These verses give us an idea of how horrible this war was of the Jaredites. It also shows us exactly what the archaeologists say happened. And you find that in verse 53. And it came to pass that Shiz pursued after Coriantumr, and he did overthrow many cities, and he did slay both women and children, and he did burn the cities thereof. Which is exactly what the archaeologists say the Olmecs did. They destroyed their own cities. Another thing to consider and help us pinpoint locations. In Mosiah 6, 1 and 12, verse 1 and verse 12, Zeniff, after having been taught in all the language of the Nephites, and having had a knowledge of the land of Nephi, or of the land of our father's first inheritance, and I having been sent as a spy among the Lamanites, that I might spy out their forces, that our army might come upon them and destroy them. This is a story of a group of Nephites that wanted to return to the land of Nephi, which they in past times had fled from before the Lamanites. In the time of King Mosiah, the father of King Benjamin, they left the land of Nephi, and that's when they came across the city of Zarahemla, the Mulekites. And this is two generations later. A group of them want to go back and reclaim the land of Nephi. And we began to till the ground, yea, even with all manner of seeds, with seeds of corn and of wheat and of barley, and with naas and with sheum, and with seeds of all manner of fruits, and we did begin to multiply and prosper in the land. So, here I believe that there are clues. Things they planted in the land of Nephi. And if somebody wants to tell me what naas and sheum are, I might be able to better pinpoint. But we don't know what those are for sure that I know of. But we do know what corn, wheat, and barley are. So we're going to follow those clues. Corn, wheat, and barley. Corn is a very hardy plant. It is planted from the tropical jungle of Yucatan to the subarctic weather of Minnesota. It can diversify in almost every climate on the planet. Weather that is comfortable for humans is also good for wheat. Wheat needs 12 to 15 inches of water to produce a good crop. It grows best when temperatures are warm, from 70 to 75 Fahrenheit, but not too hot. Wheat also needs a lot of sunshine, especially when the grains are filling. Wheat can be grown in many areas. It is restricted by heat in some areas of the world. It is also prone to root rot if the soil does not drain away water sufficiently. Barley is a tough cereal, grown in a number of environments where other grains can't grow, from Arctic latitudes and alpine altitudes to saline desert oases. Although generally a temperate crop, barley is also grown in many tropical countries, typically by poor farmers in hostile, dry, cool environments. Barley, on the other hand, is more touchy than wheat and especially corn. It cannot take high temperatures or heavy amounts of water. It is a grain very well suited to cool, dry, and poor soil. So it seems like kind of a contradiction, these two things, because it's saying that it can be grown in tropical climates, but it can't be because of the rain. But there's a good example. Barley is grown in Peru, in the deserts of Peru, because it's high altitude, it's cool, they don't get too much rain, very little actually, and so they can grow it there. So, how do you get cooler temperatures in a tropical environment? Altitude. That should be a good clue for us, right? So, altitude as a clue. Go back to our map of Central America. And as you can see, was that 75-80% of Central America is mountainous? Altitude is not a problem in Central America, is it? Yet we need to take into consideration what took place during the time of the death of Jesus the Christ. Because that passage in Mosiah where they planted corn, wheat, and barley was pre-Christ. The areas I circled there on the map, the circled mountains are called sedimentary rock, or in other words, very old mountains. All other mountains in Central America are volcanic rock, or in other words, young mountains caused by volcanic activity. There is the possibility that the rest of the mountains did not exist prior to the death of Jesus the Christ. There is also the possibility that there were mountains made from sedimentary rock which were destroyed by the rising volcanic mountains. It's hard to say one way or another. But those ones I circled are very well, geologically speaking, existed before Christ. So let's take a side trip for a moment to this beautiful little place in Central America. We're actually going back to Costa Rica. And I'd like you to meet one of the tribes in Costa Rica called the Boruca. There's a couple pictures of them, a couple pictures of their houses. Interestingly, when I showed these pictures in Yucatan, some thought for sure they were taken there in Yucatan, especially because many there still live in houses similar to these. One of our brothers in Quintana Roo lives in a house, well, he has a small cement house now where they actually sleep, but their living space is still in a house which looks exactly like the one on the bottom right. I mean, identical. So we go back to the map. This area in southern Costa Rica is the area where the Boruca live today on an indigenous reservation. If you thought Indian reservations were exclusive to the U.S., you're wrong. There are 7 in Honduras. Interesting fact, The Barucha did not even have voting rights up until 1996. The original name of the nation of the Barucha was called Dequis. Interestingly, the word Dequis, if separated into two words, Dequis, is an insult in Mayan. And when I showed that to one of our brothers and sisters there in Yucatan, the name, they kind of chuckled, and I had to drag it out of them to get me to tell me what it meant in Mayan, because they did not want to say it. In the Barucha language, the word Dequis means great river or great waters. And I have a quote. "Oh, that thou mightest be like unto this river, continually running into the fountain of all righteousness." Coincidence? Possibly. Maybe. This is the approximate ancient territory of the Dequis. Archaeologists place the beginning of the Dequis here where the star is, on the eastern side, close to the coast. Another interesting fact about the Barucha. The archaeologists say that the beginning of the Barucha civilization, there appears to be two separate societies living closely together as if they were one in the past. So, to surmise, what have we learned in this study? What are the clues we have garnered? The land of Nephi, one, has to contain copper. Two separate locations. Two, it contained iron and zinc. Three, south of the Jaredites, which my assumption is the Olmecs. Four, had to have the ability to plant barley, wheat, and corn. I know in Honduras they plant wheat and corn. I just found out yesterday that there is a species of indigenous barley that grows in Guatemala. Five, there was less destruction at the time of Jesus' death in the land of Nephi. And six, almost completely surrounded by water. So where is the promised land, or the land of Nephi? I cannot say with absolute assurity. I only wish to lay the evidence before you. You need to talk with God so that He can direct you in the way He wants you to go in life. Questions?
Yeah, you didn't tell about the honeybees.
The honeybees. Yes, the Jaredites. In the Book of Ether, it talks about honeybees several times. And if you remember the map of the Jaredites, the red line going across, let me see if I can find it here real quick. The red line going across northern Mexico, following almost the same line, except a little bit more straight. Right where the red line starts on the east coast by the Gulf of Mexico, if you drew it straight across Mexico approximately, above that line, there is no natural honeybee native to the Americas. None has been found, any fossils anywhere in the Americas above that line, honeybees. There are 4,000 species of bees in North America. None of them honeybees. Below that line, there are 21 species of stingless honeybees. That is one of my pieces of evidence, assuming that the Olmecs is the Jaredites. I can also throw in there the Mexican mammoth existed along with the Olmecs, and they found fossils of them, which the Jaredites speak of elephants. Any other questions?
Yeah, the fact or the port that was active in the agricultural area in northern Honduras that was extremely fertile into this very day.
The north coast of Honduras, if I can go back here. This northern area here in Honduras, right along this river, going up into this valley and partially into this valley, this was a major hub of trade going from South America to Mexico, north into Yucatan. They controlled the production of cocoa for generations. Which was used in the Caribbean islands as money, cocoa seeds. It is a huge valley. It has huge production. It's one of the most lush pieces of land I've ever seen. Sadly, the center of Honduras is not as nice where we are.
So you're saying chocolate
was
money?
Yes, they used cocoa seeds as their money.
The only ones that owned it was the monarch.
They highly controlled it.
Yes, if you planted one or you stole one of the seeds.
They highly controlled it. Any other questions? Okay, so the Rosita copper mine, which I mentioned several times and I never showed you where it was, is right there. And those two 11 and 12 gold mines, the Bonanza mines, are right there. The zinc mine is up here, all in that circle. If I were to take the way I look at it, the tectonic plate line cuts right through here. Follows the border almost perfectly. That's why there's 37 volcanoes in this little strip right here. Is because the tectonic plate line cuts across. So they got volcanoes from both the plates. Honduras has four volcanoes and they're all dead. They're all down here close to El Salvador. When I look at the overall percentage of land, if I draw my line, which if you remember, this is the line of the Olmec territory. If I take this as the land southward, this entire section wouldn't have had hardly any damage from that volcanic eruption. The only real damage from the volcanoes would have been on the coastline, except, of course, the earthquakes and everything else that goes with it. Whereas if you take this section up here and going into Mexico, I mean, 37 volcanoes there, and I don't know how many going up into the Chiapas in Mexico, that whole thing was in complete turmoil. And so my thought process is this. I believe because that city, Copan, which is right there on the border, is an Olmec city, I believe the division between the land north and south is somewhere right close to that border. If you follow through the storyline of their expansion, colonizing expansion, all of their first cities appear to be wooden, and that's why Zarahemla burned. It wasn't covered by a mountain, it was burnt. Those other two cities, which were built after Zarahemla, one was drowned in the ocean, one was covered by a mountain, they were built after, they were actually cities which were fortified along the border. But if you go, it says, I can't tell you the exact chapter and verse, when they're expanding going northwards, they came across the land of desolation, which was the Jaredite territory. And they called it the land of desolation not because it was infertile. They called it land of desolation because it had few trees. The previous civilization had cut all the timber. And so they were forced to start using cement and stone. If you follow this line, there are almost no stone cities below that line. There are a few, but they're very small. There are almost none. You go north of that line, and immediately into Guatemala, you have hundreds of them. If they found any, like, fossilized?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't really looked into that. I can't really say for sure. Like I said, does not complete.
So, Tommy, what just kind of point where you were thinking Zarahemla was?
Zarahemla, I can't say for sure where Zarahemla was, the actual city. If I follow, you know, I like I said, I took up my wife's wall in our house, and I was actually mapping out, just putting circles, you know, land of Zarahemla, and land of Nephi, which is east, southeast of the land of Zarahemla. And I was just putting on my map these little circles. If this is the land of Nephi, then this would have to be the land of Zarahemla, an approximation.
As to go along with your thoughts concerning the volcanic line, I mean, basically the Cascades go all the way up to Canada, and they're all moved on.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have variable, you know, it could have had that effect.
Ripple effect.
All the way up, yeah, from the earth all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wonder what changes it made on the western side of the coastline.
That I don't know, and I thought about that. When you look at the map of Nicaragua, and that other map I showed you that had all those volcanoes right here in between the lakes, these islands are actually volcanic islands. It is possible that when all those volcanoes came up, this land was created. Nicaragua could have been much narrower prior to those volcanoes. It would also make it very hard to breathe. I mean, it would make it hard to breathe. It would make it hard to strike a mat to start a fire because ash just keeps falling on your sparks if you're using flint or something. It would be very hard. And of course, the Book of Mormon tells us they couldn't light a fire. And just imagine 3 days without sunshine. It would have actually got really cold. Most of the prevailing winds go from east to west, except when we have a hurricane on the Pacific. It would have made everything crazy. Who knows what happened then? I mean, with all those cracks in the ocean and everything, currents would have been messed up and everything for a while. There probably would have been. Any other questions? I see none. I could probably print it out on PDF and make it available.
I'll talk to you about that later.
All right.
That was very interesting. I enjoyed that. All right. Why don't we go ahead and draw our service to a close? We can turn to song number 225. And if you would please stand, we will conclude our service. 225.